Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, Justin Roberts has been making music for kids for 20 years. He's just received his third Grammy nomination. I will talk with him. But first, when I say the word obituary, those of us who grew up with actual paper and newspapers all have a pretty similar picture in mind. A short column, usually with a picture and a brief bio of the person who has passed. But obituaries have changed a lot over the years, and even more in recent years. Mary Kay Shanley is an Iowa writer, the author of 10 books. Recently, she's been studying obituaries and has put together a presentation and workshop on obits for Humanities Iowa. And she is here with me today. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hi, Charity. It's nice to be with you.
Well, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So what made you want to look into obituaries?
It never occurred to me to look into obituaries until a couple years ago now, there's a group of people at the Kirkendall Public Library who meet there in Ankeny, and they're writers. It's an informal group, and they contacted me and said, would you consider coming out and talking to us about writing obituaries? And I thought, well, I've never written one, but I know how to write, and I used to be a newspaper reporter. So I put together some thoughts, and I went out there, and I thought we'd spend about 45 minutes together, and it turned into an hour and a half. And I thought, this is interesting, and I did a lot of research, and so now I have this presentation.
All right. Well,
so there it is.
Right. Once you really started looking into obituaries, let's go back in time because they do have an interesting history. When did they start showing up?
They have a fascinating history, Charity. The word obit or obituary comes from the Latin word obit, and as far as I looked at when I did my research, they started appearing as very brief announcements in the early 16th century, even in America. But by the 1800s, newspapers began publishing formal obituaries, but almost always for very prominent people, and they were very detailed accounts. And then along came in the middle of the 1800s, the Civil War. And so then they picked up obituaries on people who had fought and died in the Civil War. And then that expanded to public servants and celebrities and adventurers. And eventually it came down to a little bit of obituaries for everybody. In 1880s, this is interesting, it took a little bit of a shift, and there was what they called then death journalism, and it was in England and the U.S., and it focused primarily on the morbid and the graphic details of a person's death. For instance—
Oh, my.
I know. This is pretty interesting. Theodore Roosevelt, when his obituary was written in the New York Times, and that was in 1909, that it led with an elaborate description of the blood clot that detached itself from a vein and entered the lungs. That was the beginning of the obituary. Can you?
No.
Okay, me neither.
So those obituaries during the Civil War, when they started being about soldiers, and that's what led to them being more egalitarian, more
yes,
for everyone. What were those obits like during the Civil War?
I didn't find any online when I did that research, but they were brief, and it was always just factual. I know this much: who the person was, where he came from, what state. And how he died and when. And it was pretty much what it was, because newspapers then were a rarity anyway.
So then they started being something that would get published in the local newspaper when any member of the community died.
Yes.
And was that the job of the newspaper, of journalists at the newspaper?
Yes. They even had a name for it in the 1900s. They called it the Common Man Obituary because they had always talked about the aristocracy, but now by the mid-1900s even the 1920s, anybody who died, their life, death, and funeral information at least was fodder for an obituary. So all of us got a chance for our 15 minutes of fame.
Now, in talking about that kind of death journalism, there's certainly a morbid curiosity anytime you learn that someone has died. How long did that period last? Because it sounds like it was also, while it quenched that curiosity, it was also an incredibly bad taste.
Well, I thought so myself. I was a little bit shocked. I think as they became more a part of everyday journalism, there was a standard format that journalists everywhere followed, and it was all factual, and it was about the person's life but just the facts, you know, where you were born, where you grew up, perhaps who you married, the names of your children, that sort of thing, what you did for a living. And information about the funeral. And it sort of morphed into that really hard and fast structure that was for a very long time. Certainly when I went into the newsroom in the 60s, that was the structure. And it stayed pretty much like that till very recently in our time.
Well, and the cause of death was an important part of the obituary historically.
I can't speak for all newspapers, but actually for the Register at the time and for newspapers of worth, if you didn't put in the cause of death, they didn't want to print the obituary because that was a fact that was missing.
Interesting. Well, and as I'm sure many people who've spent time doing genealogy and looking back into their family's history, the obituary has become, in the newspapers as it was, it's become a really important record. I mean, it can really tell people a lot about their family.
Yes. Can I tell you a little story?
Yes.
when I put this presentation together, I was very cognizant by then of the fact that lots of obituaries today don't include cause of death, and that bothered me as a journalist. And because when medical information isn't included, that's a detractor to me. So I used an example of a man whom I actually knew. His name was Orville Marlowe, and he was from Perry, and he'd owned a gas station and worked for an oil company. And when Mr. Marlowe died about 20 years ago now, when he died, the funeral director's wife wondered if there was a possible link between his work because of the being in the gas station and working for the oil company and the Parkinson's, which was his cause of death, and it was listed in his obituary. And years later, because his son and Mr. Marlowe's grandson is a friend of ours, and he's a genealogist by hobby. And he came across first of all, they learned through genealogy that Mr. Marlowe's brother was one of, and Mr. Marlowe were one of four people who had what they called a cluster, and they all had Parkinson's. And then his grandson found an obituary for another half-brother that they didn't even know about, and he had also died of Parkinson's. That kind of information is valuable to the family, and it's valuable to research. And I feel strongly that people should include cause of death.
Well, and in recent years, and we'll talk more about how the obituary has morphed in recent years, but in recent years, the cause of death has become it's not necessarily included. It's purely by choice.
That's because back in the day, 60s, 70s, 80s, probably all way into the 1990s and probably into the early 2000s, those obituaries, the information was given to the funeral home or to the newspaper by the family. They gave them the information. They didn't write the obituary themselves. So when it became well, we know we can see what's happening to newspapers. So when it began to drift away, and it was the family's job to not just provide the information, but unless the funeral home wrote it for them, you know, fill in the blanks, it was their job to do it, and they determined a lot of times not to put that in. That's when we began to lose track of any threads that we were follow through a family or through a disease, and that was a shame.
Well, and I can completely understand why a family might not want to choose to have the cause of death in the obituary. Mm-hmm. And we're not necessarily thinking about generations down the road when we make that decision. We're thinking about the here and now, and many people just want the focus of the obituary to be on remembering the person.
That's right. That's right. But then you lose history. And for people who, and I think this is also true, people are becoming far more interested now in tracing family history and sending their own family history on down to the people that come after them, after us. It's more important to me that information be sent along, because once it's gone forever.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking about obituaries with Iowa writer Mary Kay Shanley. She's the author of 10 books, and recently she's been studying obituaries. She's put together a presentation and a workshop on obits for Humanities Iowa. We'll talk about how to write an obituary, if that's something that you need to do, in a few minutes as well. And you are welcome to join our conversation. What's a memorable obituary that you encountered? What do you think of how they've changed recently? Do you think they should include cause of death? Join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with children's musician Justin Roberts. He's been making music for kids for 20 years, and he's just received his third Grammy nomination for his most recent album. It's called Lemonade. I'll be talking with him in about 15 minutes. With me right now is Mary Kay Shanley. She is an Iowa writer, the author of 10 different books, and recently she's been studying obituaries. She's put together a presentation and workshop on obits for Humanities Iowa, and you are welcome to join our conversation on obituaries. You could give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mary Kay, in recent years, we've seen a dramatic shift in obituaries because they are not necessarily being published in the newspaper anymore. At this point, many newspapers are only publishing obituaries that people pay to have published, which has dramatically reduced the number of obituaries that are mm-hmm. appearing in the newspaper.
That's right. That's right. What happened was when newspapers stopped writing the obituary and just running it, it became our whatever was in it was ours, what we wanted to put
the
in it.
The family would write
it. The family.
Right.
And it got long, not surprisingly, started to get longer and longer. And, I'm thinking this is what's happened within the newsroom itself, or the newspaper itself, is that they thought, This is a fun money raiser. This is really an income for us that we hadn't had before, because they used to print them for free, and so they began to charge. And I know people who have spent a couple thousand dollars on not huge obituaries, but fairly substantial obituaries in the newspaper. And what now happens is you can write the obituary and send it to the newspaper, and it isn't even proofed. It just goes in like that. Or now you can, the newspaper will always include a notice of death, and that's just the basic information. But then the funeral home or whomever's taking care of that end of things present an obituary to them, and people can go to the funeral home online to read the obituary. So that's where a lot of people are getting their information now, and that's why it's not that fewer people are dying, it's that fewer people are getting notice of it in the newspaper.
Well, and when an obituary is put in the newspaper, as you mentioned, it's written by the family.
Right.
And often not worked on by the newspaper at all. It's something that the family gives them, and it's published as is. It's something they pay to have published.
That's right. They write the information. They give it to the funeral director, and it goes. It does not go to a newsroom anymore. It goes directly to layout, and it's put into the newspaper. And if it has any kind of mistakes in it at all, they go right along with it.
So you have to do your own fact checking, your own editing, sure that it says what you want it to say.
That's right.
We are going to talk more about writing your own obituary in a moment, and we'd love to hear from you, your experiences, your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, and we have Marianne on the line in Mason City. Hi, Marianne.
Hello. Mary Kay, this is Ruth Ann Klein's daughter.
Hi.
I went on a cemetery walk in the fall and found out that embalming first was really used in the United States during the Civil War to get Union soldiers back up to their families for burial. And I'm wondering if that is a connection to the obituaries being used during the Civil War. It would be an interesting angle anyway to explore.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that. At all.
And then it fell out of favor again until the early 1900s, until it was resurrected in Iowa City by a physician.
This is interesting.
A mortuary person. Yeah, and I'm not sure where this cemetery person got his information, but it was a very interesting talk. And then my other comment was about the death journalism. I was desperately scrambling around for the book that my grandma Klein put together. Her father's obituary in the paper, the local paper, was so funny in its tragic death journalism. It talked about, it's very short, and all it really said, it didn't give where he was born or anything. It just said he had been to the doctor across the street and then had walked over to, I forget if it was the implement dealer or the barber shop, and he was standing there telling them that he had just been told by the doctor that he had a bad heart and he was going to have to slow down, and then he dropped dead. And that's exactly what it said. He dropped dead. And I just can't imagine that showing up in the paper, but there it was. So Grandma Geisinger's husband dropped dead.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, That's all I had to add.
Right, so. Marianne, thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Well, and it also demonstrates how interesting it is for a family to have these pieces of journalism to look back on, although they clearly are not exactly dependable throughout the years for the information that you're looking for. In recent years, one of the changes, now, of course, we've always had really tremendous journalism in some of the bigger papers and in the smaller papers as well. When notable people die, the obituaries can really be remarkable pieces of writing, fascinating to read, and something that really endures for a long time. One of the changes that we've seen in recent years with people writing their own obituaries, families writing their own obituaries, or people writing the obituary before they die themselves, there have been some really remarkable obituaries published because, again, you know, the family pays to write them. And people can really send amazing messages through these obituaries.
Yes.
What kinds of things have you seen?
Well, I'll share a couple of things. First of all, Joy Corning, who was a lieutenant governor for many years in Iowa and died recently, within the last year, I think, she wrote her own obituary. And I do know a couple other people who wrote their own obituaries because they knew what they wanted to say. They didn't write it. The ones I saw were not written in first person. They were written in third person. But what was the way their story was told, the way their life story was told, was the way they wanted it to be. So that's interesting. And for fascinating reading, and this book is in most public libraries by now, it certainly should be in all, it's called The Collected Portraits of Grief, and it was written by obituary writers in the New York Times. They had staffers who were pulled aside from other work and to write. Each staffer had a certain number of obituaries to write, and they were 200-word obituaries, one for each person who was lost at Ground Zero, and that would have been 2,753 people. It is an amazing book, and most people probably don't want to own the book, but if you go to the library sometime and you have some time, take that book off the shelf and read the way those obituaries were written, because those obituaries do have all of the hard facts in them that should be shared and passed on. But you also have a sense of who the person was. And that's the big change now. When you have an obituary today that's well written, it's not just what that person was, but also who.
The obituaries that get shared today, one of the interesting things that can happen because they get published online is that they can go viral. And we certainly have seen obituaries that have been shared far and wide, where, you know, sometimes people are sharing an inspiring message about living life to the fullest, mm-hmm. or sometimes it's a message of advocacy for mental health care, something like that. I mean, we see some really remarkable things happening now.
That's right. That's right. I have one. It's a couple sentences long.
Sure.
Can I?
Yeah.
It was in the Register. It was from a man named Dan Wilson. He was at that point living in Wisconsin. He was an Iowan originally, and I had to copy this. He said, among other things, I crammed a 4-year education into 7 years. Morningside College is a Methodist school where I was forced to go to the chapel every week and take one religious course each semester for 2 years. The religion nearly turned me into an atheist. In the late 1980s, early 90s, we transferred to Houston, Texas, and became part of the Enron fiasco. There will be no interment since I'm going to be cremated. If you want to see me, you have to come by the house where Donna will have me displayed somewhere.
So someone who definitely wanted to say goodbye in their own way.
That's right. That's right. And then back to what you were talking about, ones that really have a message. And this was just this fall in the Register. This fall. Ethan Sergey Neubauer was 18 years old. He lived, I think, in West Des Moines. And he was struggling with depression, anxiety, PTSD, and survivor's guilt that was related to a very difficult childhood in Russia before he was adopted and brought here to live with his American parents. And his mother wrote the obituary.
Beautiful piece.
Yes, it was a beautiful piece. And she ended in that obituary with a plea for lawmakers to address the state's mental health crisis because of inadequate funding. And I do know because I see her mentioned in the paper quite often now, that she's become a spokesperson for change. And you know, I don't think that woman ever anticipated that.
No, that was not her wish.
No.
Let's go to the phones. Jim is on the line in Dubuque. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, when she talked about the obits now not having the cause of death listed, I just finished rereading a book called The Great Pandemic about the flu pandemic of 1918 through 2021, whatever. And suddenly all these people just died at home. And suddenly I think back of all these obits where it's listed, the person died at home after a brief illness. And I see that so many times, and suddenly I have to wonder, is there something going around that we need to worry about?
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking about epidemics of the past and wondering about not just the personal health information that a family might be interested in, but the public health information. And Mary Kay, I mean, that goes along with what you were talking about earlier for research purposes.
It does. And I suppose there's somebody somewhere that studies and follows these trends. But you can learn a lot just from what you see in the obits now. I didn't think I'd ever be talking about obituaries, but I think they segue into that whole thing of passing familial information and public information on to the people that come after us, and because life is so fast-paced and information is so everywhere today, it's really almost hard for people to keep up.
Let's go to the phones again. Matthew is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Matthew.
Good morning.
And you have a lot of experience with this. You're a funeral director. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was just driving home. I was actually just filling up the hearse. I'm on the way to the Veterans Cemetery for a burial, but I heard you all talking about obituaries and the family writing them. And actually, there was a lady that was talking about Union soldiers getting embalmed to go home. And actually, one thing that I kind of learned here from Marty Mitchell back in Marshalltown, Iowa, the soldiers would purchase a coin. And basically, that coin would be kept on their person in case that they actually did expire on the battlefield. And that was their token and basically a way of showing that, yes, I want to be embalmed. I want to go home. It was basically like burial insurance for those folks.
Oh, fascinating. I think we've got a whole show to do on the history of embalming, Matthew. Let me, before we run out of time, what do you think about obituaries these days?
You know, I heard that that lady talk about, family writing them, and actually I'd like to see more of that done. In actuality, most of my experience, it's always the funeral home that writes the obituary, and we just kind of cobble together, try to sum up somebody's life in a few short paragraphs mm-hmm. and try and keep it under about $250. It can be a feat sometimes, Charity.
All right. Well, Matthew, thank you so much for calling. And we do just have a couple of minutes left. Mary Kay, what is your advice for people when they need to write an obituary?
Well, I think they have to. I think it's not something that you sit down and just jot out on the back of a napkin. You take the facts that have to be in the obituary so that you have a structure. And then my advice would be to talk to those closest to the person who is deceased to get a real sense about that person and see if you can take some of that – of what that person was and put it into – sentences and phrases, because what you're trying to do is paint a picture with words that will last.
And we mentioned that to get it published, often no one else is proofreading that. So
no one else.
Also some good advice to make sure that it gets proofread before you publish, right?
And as a writer, as a professional writer, and I've the biggest book I've ever written was 100 no, not 100 was sorry, seemed like it. It was 56,000 words, and the last time I looked at it before it went to the publishing house, I read every single word out loud. And that's what people need to do. Because when you look down at something on the paper, especially if you helped write it, you will put in words that aren't there because they're in your mind. And then if they're not written down on there on the paper, it doesn't make the transition.
Well, Mary Kay Shanley, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity. It was nice to be here.
Mary Kay Shanley, an Iowa writer, the author of 10 books. We were talking about obituaries today. She recently put together a presentation and workshop on obituaries for Humanities Iowa. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with musician Justin Roberts. Your kid probably knows some of his music. He's been making music for kids for 20 years and recently got his third Grammy nomination. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.